on general government. Today is Wednesday, April the 27th. I am going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5001, the Board of Accountancy. We will be hearing from the agency, then public testimony. It is the chair's intention to go into work session on this budget as well as a fee bill. We have a call into Representative Smith. Representative Krupp is testifying. Senator Morris is doing some work with the co-chairs this morning, and so we will just limp by the best we can and go scare up a quorum to actually do our business. So with that, I am going to invite the agency to make their high-level Phase 2 remarks, and we'll continue on until we're ready to go hunt for missing colleagues. So with that, good morning, and we invite you to begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stuart Morris. I'm a public accountant with an office in Portland, Oregon, and currently the chair of the Board of Accountancy. The Oregon Board of Accountancy is charged with protecting the public through the regulation of licensed public accountants and public accountants and public accounting firms. Licensed accountants provide a broad array of services to individuals, large and small businesses, public-private companies, municipalities, and government agencies. The public value of these services is derived from the professional standards, including the professional code of conduct the licensed accountants are required to follow. The Board of Accountancy safeguards the public through regulation to assure that at all times licensed accountants in Oregon meet minimum standards of competency, performance standards, and comply with professional code of ethics. The public accounting profession is greatly affected by the national and international aspect of today's business and economic environment. Licensees are required to conform to professional standards in the work they do and to comply with the appropriate statutes and rules in each state in which they may practice. State boards are challenged to maintain high levels of public protection without imposing undue restrictions on the public accounting profession. The clients that licensed public accountants work for frequently do business in more than one state and are subject to regulations in each of those states. They can be as far away from Oregon as Florida, Alaska, Hawaii, and therefore are required to meet all of those standards. Investment decisions are made every day by millions of investors who rely on the audits performed by these public accountants. The Uniform Accountancy Act is one of the tools available to the Board of Accountancy for achieving standards of regulation that are uniform throughout all of the United States. The Board is challenged to meet public needs. An evolving profession that is confronted with increasing public demand to provide more and different services than have ever been traditionally provided before. For example, licensed accountants are now allowed to pay and receive commissions, which is a significant change in the law. This trend to provide more and diversified services has also resulted in complaints that require greater expenditures on the part of the board for enforcement. All these factors contribute to an increasing number of complaints based on the complex technical issues, which have resulted in greater expenditures for complaint investigations. The accounting profession has embarked on a new computerized CPA exam. This is now replacing the old pen and paper exam that used to take 2.5 days. This is as a result of new technology that is causing us to move forward. The cost to the exam candidate now will be higher as a result of these new computerized examinations. Also, the cost of fee grading has increased as a result of this. The board has responded to this increase in exam costs by reducing its application fees. The first year of the computer exam confirmed that candidates will pass the exam with fewer attempts, which we hope will then result in their fees not being so much higher than they have been in retaking the exam. The board's revenue has been reduced. Lower application fees are part of it. and the higher passing rates, which means fewer exams being taken. Board expenditures are also reduced somewhat because the responsibility to administer the CPA exam twice a year has now been eliminated, and it's no longer handled in Salem as it has been. As far as our development into our technology, in 2004, the board implemented a subscription program, a listserv, by which licensees or members of the public may receive board information by email. A significant number of licensees and exam candidates live or work outside the United States, and the interest in the most effective means of communicating with these licensees has become very important. Since the listserv was established, the number of subscribers continue to grow. The board's newsletter and other information is transmitted to subscribers quickly and at no cost to the board. Members of the public may also subscribe to the program. The board database was recently upgraded to provide data security, a user-friendly environment, and efficient and accurate reporting capabilities for performing, measuring standards, and other board needs. The database is continually updated to maintain high standards. Licensees' information is published on the website in a licensee search format, which allows members of the public to learn whether their accountant has a current active Oregon license with the board. The board has been accepting a payment for fees via the internet since 1997, which allows them to pay directly. The website is an important tool of communication and outreach. In February 2005, the board was one of the first small agencies to migrate to the new Brand Oregon format. Board staff monitors the website continuously to ensure that information is current and accurate. Since the board email subscription service began, the number of visitors to the website has increased dramatically, around 60%. All board forms and applications are available on the website, providing convenience and efficiency for licensees. In the future, the licensee's search feature will be expanded to include disciplinary history on any Oregon accountant. I appreciate this opportunity to discuss with you the work of the Board of Accountancy, and I will be glad to answer any of your questions.
Any questions? Thank you. The one thing I think I would note with interest is the fact that you're going to put the disciplinary action against any of your licensees on the website. I think that level of transparency is very helpful to consumers, and I applaud your board for making the decision to do that. All right, Madam Agency Head.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carol Reeves. I'm the administrator of this agency, and I will talk a little about more specific budget items.
May I interrupt you before you
yes.
begin? Are you working from a particular set of documents that the panel can follow
on the testimony that you received early on?
Okay.
This should start at about page 6. It's the heading that says budget reductions.
Great. Thank you.
There were no budget reductions to the board budget in either 2001-03 or in 2003-05. The reason for this is because exam expenditures at that time were expected to increase, and we were unaware what the costs of the internet exam were going to be, and so we were maintaining a budget that would be sufficient to satisfy those needs should they arise. In 2005-2007, however, the governor's recommended budget does include reductions that reflect both reduced costs for the administration of the CPA exam and reduced operating costs in other areas as well. Among the cost reductions and program delivery activities that the board has taken on in the past 2 years and continues to, the first, as Mr. Morris has already mentioned, is an increased use of technology. We are finding the website to be a critical tool for publication of information to the board, and equally important, the electronic subscription service that Mr. Morris mentioned. We also have downloadable forms, which make life easier for folks who are not close by. People may change their address via the website, which is a requirement that is subject to a $100 civil penalty should they fail, so that helps to keep that moving. And the board also works with other state agencies, with other professional organizations, with local governments, to put information on our website that affects their agency or activities of their agency that, in fact, may have application to CPAs as well. This happens probably a couple of times a year that we will have outside information, outsiders asked to place information on our website for them. We also have taken steps to issue licenses on a faster, more efficient basis. For example, there is a level of authority now. It's called substantial equivalency. And you'll be hearing more about this in our testimony today, but this is an authority that is granted to folks who live out there and want to practice in here, but they don't want to move over here. They want to stay out there where they are in another state. And so these folks who are practicing under substantial equivalency apply to us under that provision, and those notices and authorization are issued administratively and usually can be turned around in 24 to 48 hours.
It is the substantial equivalency, if I understand correctly, that your fee bill is based around. Could you touch on that? Because it seems that the revenues from the fee bill are pretty modest. And I don't understand, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, in your presentation of the fee bill. I don't understand why you need a fee bill with revenues that are this modest, why the agency can't just deal with it. Could you explain the correlation between the substantial equivalency and the fee bill?
Madam Chair, I'd be glad to. Thank you for the question. Substantial equivalency provisions were approved by the legislature in 1999 and became effective in 2000. It is a new licensing feature that is being encouraged in all of the states. All 50, probably 48 of the 50 jurisdictions actually have requirements that are substantially equivalent to the Uniform Accountancy Act for licensing. Those states that qualify in that regard are eligible then to issue licenses or to have their licensees receive this licensing authority from other states. A fewer number have decided to go ahead and issue licenses based on substantial equivalency. The purpose is to allow this cross-state practice with less bureaucratic requirements for licensees. Someone in Minnesota, for example, a large firm, they may have licensees who are stationed in Minnesota, licensed in Minnesota, but they move out into other states to do work and come back, you know, back and forth. Folks in Idaho certainly have clients in Oregon, clients in Montana, and rather than have to get a full license, if they qualify under the provisions of substantial equivalency, they may qualify for this license. Oregon accepted this in 1999, went into effect in 2000. We have the authority to implement our fees through administrative rule. We had no applications in 2000 or 2001, and so we implemented the rule in 2002. Implementing a fee for this license provision. It's a matter of a license being issued and a cost or a fee being charged for the license. The numbers of people who are applying under this provision are growing. We have seen an increase from 2 the first year to 17 to about, we have a total of 45 licensees now who are under substantial equivalency. So it's simply a matter of establishing a fee for this service that the board is providing.
Senator Morsett.
That's a reciprocal agreement with Idaho and Washington and Minnesota.
They may be. Senator Johnson, Senator Morsett, licenses may be issued under reciprocity, but they may also be issued under substantial equivalency if the provisions are met. It's a faster way to go, not necessarily cheaper.
Well, that's what I was talking about, is under the equivalency. There has to be some benefit to our homegrown licensees. I mean, obviously, we don't want people just coming in to compete. We want to be able to go out and do exactly the same thing. Now, the question of you're doing it under administrative rule, is there a compelling reason to do it under statutory authorization?
Senator Johnson, Senator Morsett? The authority to issue the license was approved by statute. Hmm. We have the authority to implement our fees through administrative rule.
Be part.
It was only the fee part. Okay. And when we implement a fee by administrative rule, then we must come back in the following session and have that fee approved by the legislature. And that is the piece that you're going to hear about in our Senate Bill 5002, which is not a fee increase but establishment of a new fee. Senator Johnson, does this respond to your question adequately?
Yes.
Okay.
Please continue.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up to Senator Morissette as well, it is a reciprocal thing. Our licensees have the ability to qualify under substantial equivalency in any of the other states.
Okay.
So it does benefit our licensees as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Other licenses that we issue administratively, municipal auditor licenses are approved administratively and issued, and they may be turned around in perhaps 2 weeks, depending on the information that we receive from the licensee. Firm registrations are turned around in 24 to 48 hours. All of these help the licensees as well as the office in efficiency. We use phone conferencing as often as possible. This policy allows volunteer members from every area of the state to participate in our discussions, to participate in the board activities and discussions of professional issues with no cost to them in terms of time or money in travel time. The board also uses the principle of delegated authority to achieve efficiencies in office expenditures and office services. Various authorities have been issued to the administrator, delegated to the administrator, to affect policies that the board has already discussed, made decisions on, and documented in writing. And those policies, whatever they may be, can go forward without having to wait for board approval on every item. The board is interested in providing the opportunity for online licensing if it can be found to be cost-effective and not interfere with public protection. So far, we do have online registrations that are underway in other areas. For example, we will be registering sponsors for our ethics continuing education program, and that will be online. We are considering online applications for re-exam applicants of the Uniform Certified Public Accountancy Act. Peer review transparency is a large issue in front of all state boards at this time, and this board is continuing its commitment to both public protection and leadership in this area by developing a program that will allow the board to receive information from licensees about the results of peer reviews that have been conducted on the licensee's work. The board and a special task force have been working on this project for over 2 years, and they are to the point now where they will be implementing a program. First of all, implementing a reporting requirement for licensees to provide copies of peer review reports to the board. This is a significant investment in public protection without a significant cost to the licensees. We anticipate implementation of this program in January of 2006, and the administration of this program will ultimately affect our board expenditures in both committee and staff time, which will have to be addressed when we understand the extent of the cost.
So are you now, Ms. Reeves, beginning your major policy and budget issues?
On this program, Madam Chair.
To be blunt, I'm having a little trouble following where you are. Are you...
I'm still discussing the cost reductions and improved program delivery, and I'm giving examples of those items.
Okay, and then where are you planning to go?
I'm following the testimony instructions that we were given, but I'm perfectly happy to move on to any area you would like.
Well, I think for this phase two, what we're still interested in doing is just doing a quick overview of the agency mission, and your board chair was kind enough to provide much of that. I think we're interested in talking about your primary programs and customers, then the policy and budget issues, and move quickly through your budget notes, any audit findings that you have. We're prepared to work this budget, and I'm just trying to encourage you to move on.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to. Budgetary issues primarily is that exam revenue is significantly reduced in the first 9 months of the computer exam. We're developing statistics to determine what are going to be reasonable exam revenue projections for the next biennium. We have two activities that are going to increase administrative expenditures, and that is two new committees. The board has no policy option packages.
What are those committees?
The peer review program that I was just mentioning. The board has appointed a new independence committee for professional ethics. And at this time, we believe the cost of that committee is going to be easily absorbed in our current budget.
What will be the charge of the ethics committee? Will you be doing peer counseling or actual disciplinary action? Or
The board has adopted the AICPA independent standard, which has a multitude of interpretations and rulings that affect that standard. Before the board can adopt those interpretations, they need to be reviewed on a regular basis and recommended that this is something the board should adopt for its enforcement of the independence rule. It is this committee's responsibility to follow all of the interpretations and rulings on the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants independence rule that is now our independence rule as well, so that we can enforce it accurately.
Okay.
We have no special policy option packages. The essential packages were developed and based on decreased spending in various categories, including reduced expenditures for the uniform certified public accountant exam. Are any balance? I think you have before you a worksheet showing ending balances. It shows the ending balance projections for the remainder of 2003-2005 and 2005-2007. You will note that our minimum ending balance occurs each year in the month of April, generally. And the minimum ending balance projected in 03-05 is around $536,000, which is equal to 8 months' operating expenses. The minimum ending balance that is projected in the 05-07 biennium is $456,079, which is equal to 7 months' operating expenses.
Chair. Yes. Representative Rocky.
I think it would be a good idea for you to take just 1 minute explaining on the record why you're asking for a fee increase when you have that much money in reserves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vakian. This is not a fee increase. It's the establishment of a new fee for a new service that is being performed.
Same question. Then.
All right. Madam Chair.
Why the need for a new revenue source when you have 7 to 8 months of reserves? I'm not implying there isn't a good reason. I just think it's a good idea if you explain that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Vakian, it's not a matter of seeking a source of revenue as it is putting an appropriate fee to the service that is being provided. This is a license that is being issued to folks outside of the state to come and practice in this state. If we didn't establish a fee to go with it, we would be offering them this privilege at no cost when our own licensees pay a significant fee for their license issuance and renewal every year. So it's simply an initial fee being under establishment.
Thank you for asking that, Representative Avaki. And I have the same question. I mean, you have substantial cash balances and we're doing a fee.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Crump.
Madam Chair, along that lines, with that much in ending balance and projected to be ending balance, I guess I wonder why we're not actually trying to reduce the fees for everyone in the state of Oregon. Every time we can put money back in the pockets of business, it either gets reinvested or spent somewhere in the economy, and those are positives. So that's a lot of ending balance, and I'd like to see you consider reducing your fees.
May I hop on to that?
Sure. Representative Avakian.
From Mr. Upadhyay, if you don't mind, maybe you could comment on your perspective of the appropriateness of that level of a reserve balance.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Avakian, yes, we've had a number of discussions about this. Is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. You'd be seeing ending balances from 3 months to 12 months for different state agencies. For an agency like the Department of Administrative Services or Department of Justice, where there is a captive customer base, I think they can do with less amount of ending balance. But agencies like the Board of Accountants, where it's it depends on the number of licensees, you'd be seeing at least around 6 months of ending balance, on average around 6 months of ending balance. In this case, the ending balance that we show is around 11 months. And the reason is that, and we had these discussions with the agency during the governor's budget development, they went into a new type of licensing, the computerized licensing. And when the budget was developed, we just had around 6 months of experience with this kind of licensing. So at that time, it was felt that, you know, maybe they should not be reducing their fees. But reduction of fees, it depends on the board. And
Madam Chair, if I may.
Representative Mbakian, follow up.
Thank you for that explanation. Yet it seems that if you count 0507 projected ending balance, you've got almost 8 years worth of ending balances that are consistently at about 11 months, which would indicate to me that there's been enough time to show the stability of the revenue stream to this particular agency.
Madam Chair, Representative Avakian, you may want to give directions to the board to look at their ending balances and maybe come back and report in the interim.
I'm not necessarily implying that I think they should do something different. I'm just curious what the explanation is. And you gave us one that sounded reasonable, that they have a particular type of clientele, it's a particular type of agency, and you don't want to be too risky. But it just looks so incredibly stable and consistent for 4 biennia in a row that it just makes me question. At what point then do you decide, okay, they've proven that the risk doesn't exist, let's do something with those ending balances?
Madam Chair, Representative Avakian, the state actually does not have a policy with regards to the ending balance, and we depend on the board. And the board, of course, the agency has its stakeholders. Any fee increases that you see are supported by the stakeholders. This agency has not brought forward any fee increases, and board. In fact, there has been a slight reduction because of the change in the examination fee. And in fact, I had a talk with the agency with regards to where does this agency's fee stand with relates to the other states. And what I heard is it's in the middle.
Maybe I would invite comment from Mr. Pittman as the chair of the board. Mr. Morris, I'm sorry.
That was yesterday.
I'm here today.
Madam Chair. He's back today.
The board has, over the last 5 years that I've served on the board, has wrestled with fees. We have had very minor increases. We've been blessed with an increasing enrollment, and at this, as candidates at this point, we have had some unusual expenditures in the area of investigation that were quite expensive. One investigation in the last year was over $20,000 alone just for bringing in outside experts that could reasonably assess it. Without going each time and figuring out how to raise more money at each point, like good accountants, we keep a small reserve that will allow us to operate without interruption.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. On this issue, I'll go wherever the committee chooses to go, but I do want to share one thought with you. I have some friends who are near and dear to me who are accountants, and I have to share with this committee, if there is any group of folks who would be fiscally conservative in ensuring that they weren't giving a dime more than they needed to, and if there was ever a group who knew how best to manage cash flow, it's going to be the Board of Accountancy. And so for whatever those comments are worth, I truly have to believe we're dealing with a group of folks who understand how to read the information that's before them and how to make a fiscally sound decision.
Madam Chair, if I may, further comment. Again, I want to point out that the ending balance that you are counting as 11 months occurs at a time when our revenue is at its highest. It's during our renewal period. If you look back to April, I think that is what you see as a true low-ending balance that this board has over a two-year period, and that's only projected at 7 and 8 months in the next 2 years. Additionally, I would like to say that the board has made a policy decision that they wish to carry an ending balance that will allow them to handle complex investigations should one come on. The state of Arizona was saddled with an investigation 2 years ago that ended up costing them $300,000 to investigate and complete. We don't anticipate anything of that magnitude for this board. The consultants that we recently hired for $30,000 were a large expenditure, but this ending balance is also for those kinds of safeguards.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Council. Share with me really quick, if we had a major scandal, corporate scandal, isn't that where that ending balance would need to be utilized?
Yes, Mr. Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Smith, you're right. That is the purpose for holding, that is one of the purposes for holding the ending balance.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Moore, sir.
Not to cast aspersions on the industry itself, but I think there have been some major scandals recently, and I think that because they are probably the most trusted of individuals in terms, as a group, there's less oversight in many ways. And in other words, we were not impacted by any of the Enron accountings. Were we in the state of Oregon? Did you talk about that for just a moment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please.
Senator Morissette. Thank you for asking that question. Yes, Arthur Anderson was, of course, licensed in the state of Oregon, and we terminated the registration for the public accounting firm. We also looked at those accountants who were involved in any audits that may have been licensed in Oregon. And audits had been done by four different accounting firms over the years, and we looked at each of those and found that there were no Oregon licensees who had responsibility for signing on those. So we were fortunate that our only involvement was to the extent of terminating the public accounting firm.
May I follow up?
Follow up, Senator Morissette.
That could have possibly been a fairly expensive investigation. And so what you're saying is the ending balance would have allowed you to get into a much more extensive if you had to.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, what you're saying is true, but I think had we become embroiled in that particular affair, I think Representative Smith's comment at an earlier meeting that our ending balance would be nothing but a drop in the bucket toward the expenses that would be required, and that would be a problem I hope we don't have to face.
Thank you. Let's move along.
The next portion that I was going to discuss is legislation that is proposed.
Please do.
All right. The board itself has two bills that have been moved out of the House, and they have also now been approved in the Senate, at least in committee. I don't think they've come on the Senate floor yet. Those are House Bill 2085 and House Bill 2195. Neither of those bills have a fiscal impact for the board.
What's the nature of the bills?
House Bill 2085 is a bill to remove the requirement that licensees who perform peer review for Oregon licensees, that those performing the peer review be required to have an Oregon license. In 1999,
removes the requirement that CPA doing peer review hold an Oregon CPA license.
Exactly.
Why would you want to do that?
This was, we believe, a Scrivener's error in 1999. Substantial legislation occurred in 1999 to the accountancy bill under the terms of the Uniform Accountancy Act. And at that time, the licensing statute, the citation to the licensing statute, was placed in such a way in a new definition that was placed in the statute that it imposed a licensing requirement on CPAs, certified public accountants, and public accountants who perform peer review for Oregon licensees. First of all, this is not necessary. Peer review itself is done by approved peer review programs who are performing according to national standards. So the standards are the same across the country under these programs for the peer review itself. Secondly, the work that is being performed that is under review is performed according to national standards. So there's nothing unique about the work that is being reviewed in a peer review, nothing unique to Oregon, nor is there anything unique about the peer review process in Oregon that would require an Oregon license. And in fact, it would probably be difficult or create problems for some licensees who, for business reasons, may find it necessary or preferable to have their peer review performed by someone in another state. For example,
still holding a CPA.
Still holding a licensed active CPA credential, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
And the other?
House Bill 2195 accomplished a couple of housekeeping bills and also goes back to our peer review. First of all, it removed the word retired from the language that discusses eligibility requirements for an inactive license. And it suggests that in order to apply for and receive an inactive license in Oregon, that you must, in fact, be enjoying your golden years. That is not the case. The board interprets the word retired to mean retired from the practice of public accountancy. There are many licensees who do work that does not require an active status license. For example, you're working for a corporation, or you're in education, or you're working in the government, but you still have a license. You just need not keep it active. Okay? This bill also authorizes the board to issue cease and desist orders, which is a disciplinary authority that we would like to be able to use against non-licensees or against licensees whose are either judgment-proof or whose licenses are in lapse status.
Who at this point would have the ability to cause an unlicensed CPA to cease
nobody.
Working?
Madam Chair, no one.
No, and so you're asking for this new authority for you to issue the cease and desist?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And finally, House Bill 2195 also includes a provision to clarify that the board has authority to look at, to require and to review peer review reports on licensees in Oregon who are required to have peer review. There are a couple of other bills out there that may affect may have a fiscal impact on the board. Assuming they pass, we have no idea whether they will. If you wish, I can talk about them or I can pass.
Quickly.
Okay. House Bill 2166 is a bill that is would like to remove the requirement for municipal auditor license in Oregon. If this bill passes, there will be about a $31,000 biennial revenue reduction for the fees that we receive for municipal auditor licenses at this time. There's a House Bill 2003 that requires agencies to provide ongoing review, research, and fiscal analysis of administrative rules. If this bill should pass, we see a fiscal impact of $135,000 per biennium. And it would require a fee increase in order to meet those costs. House Bill 3237 also requires agencies to provide a certain review and fiscal analysis of administrative rules. We see the fiscal impact of that one being $62,000 to the agency for the 2005-2007 biennium and would require a one-time fee increase in order to meet those expenditures.
Okay. All right. We've gone through the legislation. Representative Smith.
I have a question that digresses back to the cash balance report.
Yes.
Why the huge discrepancy in June 04 on personnel services? Personnel services. All of a sudden, it drops down to 14,000.
Madam Chair.
People didn't earn their keep that month.
Representative Smith, I can give one reason. No, I can't. I'm wondering if it's a typo.
Yeah, it must be.
I'm wondering if it's a typo. I apologize if it is. In June 04...
You don't know of any reason.
I don't. Okay. In fact, in that month, we had a double fill.
I'm sure it's
so if anything, it should have been up. So okay. At the most, I would guess it should have been a 3.
Okay.
Where are we here? Yeah, 37 to 32. I'll bet it should have been a 3.
Okay. I just want to make sure there's no extraordinary event there.
You're right. Good. Thank
All
you
right.
for pointing that out. I'll check it.
All right, let's continue to press ahead.
I'm finished with testimony, Madam Chair.
Lovely. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. Satish, may we hear from you? Senator Morissette.
Who determines the pay rate of the administrator? I see it's $181,567. Is that in keeping with similar positions throughout?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the amount you're seeing is a biennium cost for the position. It includes all of the benefits. It's not just the salary. It is all benefits, including PERS. The all personnel classifications in state agencies, including the Board of Accountancy, are governed by the Department of Administrative Services classification program. And so this position is in a class, what's called an executive management position D, class D, which is probably a low to middle end of the management executive programs. So the positions and the salaries associated with them are determined by DAS.
Okay. Mr. Upadhyay.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. This is Sandeep Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I will be providing you with an overview of the governance budget for the Oregon Board of Accountancy. If you please refer to my presentation document. If you turn to page 2, the Board of Accountancy is part of the Consumer and Business Services Program Area budget. Its budget is fairly small. It's just 0.2% of the total program area budget, and there is no general fund. It's all other funds. And this agency supports the governor's principle regarding economic development. Moving on to page 4, the chart there shows you that the budget is all other funds, and it's mainly supported with licensing fees. The chart on page 5 shows you the various expenditure categories. 59% of the budget is personal services, and 41% is services and supplies. Moving on to page 6, this does a comparison between across different biennia. The budget for the governor's recommended budget for 05-07 is $1,487,963 total funds. This is a 5% decrease from the 03-05 legislatively approved budget. Personal services have increased by 11%, and services and supplies have decreased by 22%. And the board has 7 full-time equivalent positions. The major policy issues, the budget continues all existing operations. As you can see, there's a reduction in services and supplies. The total reduction is $189,698. There's a reduction of this $146,000 is because of the new computerized exams, and there was another reduction of $43,000 based on a review of the agency's expenditures. And the other policy issue that came up during the governor's budget was the ending balance issue, which we've already discussed about. And lastly, there's also a fee bill which ratifies the $100 substantial equivalency fee bill. On the fee bill, I just want to, I know we've talked about this, this is not a new fee. It's something as a result of a legislative action in 2001, so this is just continuing the fee. Senate Bill 333 was passed by the legislature a few millennia ago, which requires that if an agency establishes a new fee by administrative rule, the legislature has to approve this, so that's what it is. And this is not a huge revenue-generating fee. So if you have any questions...
Any questions of Mr. Upadhyay? Okay. I think we had a public...
I have a 101-type question.
Representative Smith, 101.
Page 2. I apologize. I should know this, but I don't. It says consumer and business services. Does that mean that you folks fall under the Department of Consumer and Business Services?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no. There are, I think, around 6 program areas. And all the state agencies are lumped.
The agencies are lumped by program area.
So what you can see is, I think there are, under the Consumer and Business Services program area, there are 17 agencies.
Got it.
So this is part of that program area.
Thank you.
I have the same question.
I just learned something.
Any other questions of Mr. Padre? All right. We had only 2 people sign up to testify, Mr. Morris and Ms. Reeves, and they have concluded that. I would give one last call to the audience to see if anybody missed the opportunity who wants to avail themselves.
It's too early in the day for last calls.
There being none.
I think we should call Mr. Douglas up just to make him earn his
right
back there.
There being none, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5001 and open a work session on House Bill 5001. Mr. Winan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have the staff recommendations in front of you. It's in a memo. And the recommendations start at the bottom. Our recommendation here is to recommend the adjustment. Now, this is on the budget bill, not the fee bill. recommend a reduction for the PERS savings and the Attorney General rate savings. That aggregates $11,000 in other funds limitation reduction to the budget. Also, with respect to the performance measures you have them attached, we're recommending that number four, which had to do with customer satisfaction, be replaced with the two standard performance measures that all agencies are being asked to review and then come back in 07 with their targets. And those are numbered 6 and 7 in the table. And that we recommend approval of performance measure number 3 relating to the processing of complaints. We're not recommending approval of performance measures 1, 2, and 5. And instead, that this was out of the discussion in phase 1. There was discussion about that we felt that the subcommittee felt the agency needed to rework these and come back with some, during the interim, with some more performance measures that didn't address activities so much, but more outcomes or tied to the objectives of the organization. And so that isn't, we would reflect that with your approval that in the budget report they would be asked to come back then to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee by August of 2006. And now I'm starting to recruit members of that committee because August looks like it's going to be a long committee meeting. It's going to be dealing with a lot of agencies coming back with performance measures. So that staff recommendations with respect to the budget.
Good. Ms. Reeves, Representative Smith.
Thank you. Quick question. With the Attorney General, do you folks bill on an hourly basis or do you have a contract?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we are billed on an hourly basis.
Thank you. Need a motion?
I do. I just, Ms. Reeves, you've had an opportunity to review these recommendations. Do you have any additional comments?
Madam Chair, thank you for asking me. However, I would hope to have some further direction on the measures that are not approved at some later time.
Yep.
All right. With that, the Chair would entertain a motion on the LFO recommendation with respect to the Board of Accountancy. Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for the Board of Accountancy. Any questions? Any objections? So ordered.
We're going to move this to full as amended with the amendment.
Yes, we move this to full with a due pass recommendation as amended. We're looking for carriers. Representative Avakian steps up. Oh, he was pointing at Representative. I didn't have my spectacles on. How silly of me. Representative Krupp, as volunteered, would you carry this to full?
Be happy to, Madam Chair.
And we need carriers in the House and the Senate, and I think to stay consistent, we'd ask you to stick with this in the House.
Okay.
And Representative Morissette, would you be inclined to do the honors in the Senate? All right. With that, then, we are going to close the work session on House Bill 5001 and open a public hearing. Let's just go public hearing to start with. Open a public hearing on House Bill 5002. Ms. Reeves.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Carol Reeves. I'm the administrator for the Board of Accountancy. First, let me clarify that the Board is not seeking to increase any fees in the 2005-2007 biennium. Rather, House Bill 5002 is a delinquent, belated bill. It establishes a fee for a new license authority issued under provisions of substantial equivalency that were approved by the legislature in 2001. The substantial equivalency fee was implemented by administrative rule in 2002. Approval of the fee is being requested at this time because we failed to bring a fee bill in the 2003-2005 legislative session. The reason was because I believed that all fees were going to be brought in an omnibus bill by the governor. It turned out they did not do that in 2003-2005, and it was not until this time of the year that we realized my mistake, and it was too late to bring a fee bill to approve this fee in 2003-2005. So this bill is coming to you very belatedly.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. This is a good question for the Chair. What percentage of this fee is tax deductible?
100%.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Reeves, what happens if this panel doesn't approve this?
If this panel doesn't approve this, then we would have to stop issuing substantial equivalency licenses. for having no authority to charge them to do it, and we would not issue it without a license fee. And I guess we would have to go back with another bill asking the legislature to authorize a fee for this service.
There's another option, Madam Chair.
I would ask the professional staff to comment.
I think what also could happen is that if the legislature doesn't ratify it, then they would go through the administrative process and reestablish the fee and come back in the 07 session with another bill to ratify the fee statute. Right, Law?
Representative Smith.
I had that with Rep. Crop at the beginning. I'd be the most conservative, and he's winning. I'm just a firm believer that in this situation, you've got a group of folks who have probably scoured this increase. They're not going to be up front saying we're okay with this if they weren't. They understand their cash flow needs, and here's the other issue as to why I'll support this. I truly believe that if there was a major scandal in the state and they had to come back to the state, to the e-board, the first thing the e-board is going to say is, why didn't you have enough cash on hand to deal with this yourself? And so, I think there's a group of folks on board who are monitoring this closely. I think they understand their needs. I think they're trying to be proactive in the event of an issue. And I'm good with this.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Ivakian.
Is there not... Again, I'm not saying that you should do this because it creates a financial burden for you, but is there not another option that you just don't charge a fee? And legally, you can choose not to charge a fee if you want
to. Madam Chair, Representative Ivakian, that is true. That would be an option, that we could offer this license to folks from out of state at no fee. I don't think we would be treating our own licensees well if we did it that way. I doubt if the board would approve that. The board, being accountants as they are, generally look to the cost of providing a service and attaching the cost to the people who receive the service.
So you're characterizing this really as basic equity, that our licensees would be picking up the tab for others that are coming in from out of state seeking a service, and this really just levels the playing field and doesn't unduly burden our own Oregon licensees.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes.
Any other questions? Representative Crump.
Madam Chair, I'm going to be a no on the fee increase for philosophical reasons only. I frankly agree with the premise of House Bill 5000. I think it is proper in terms of equity to charge individuals who reside outside of the state who do practice here. The reason I'm going to vote no is because I want to send a message to the board. I'd love to have you take that back and discuss with your board. I think your ending cash balances are excessive. I, however, want at the same time compliment you as an agency that I think and a board that has done an exemplary job of managing your cash flow and your issues. And frankly, I don't see the reason, looking at your low ending balances, I don't see any reason to carry the amount of money that you are. I'd love to see you consider a fee reduction across the board to all. I would love for us to be able to send the message. You probably don't know this, but last session there were 187 fee bills in the legislature that resulted in about $906 million in fee increases that will occur in 05-07. $246 million that occurred in 03-05. Those ramp up this 05-07 biennium to 906. And those are figures that were delivered to me by the Senate Majority Office. When it was a Senate Majority Office, which it isn't anymore. So given the nature of fee increases and how so many individuals view those as taxes on individuals who engage in certain services, I would love nothing more than to hold up the Board of Accountancy as a shining example of an organization that's managed their cash flow well, has performed a great service, has adequate cash reserves, and has, as a reward to all, has reduced their fees slightly. I'd love to be able to say that in public. And, Madam Chair, that's the reason that I am voting no, but I do compliment the board and the staff for a job well done.
Any other comments? We have a testimony sheet signed up, and...
Only the chair.
No one save the chair and Ms. Reeves have signed up. We have heard from both of them, And so with that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5002 and open a work session on House Bill 5002. Mr. Upadhyay, any comments?
No, Madam Chair. The governor's budget includes this bill.
Mr. Winan, any comments?
Madam Chair, LFO is supportive of this only because of the equity issue and not because of the need for the cash. And
thank you, Mr. Winan.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Smith.
Is there a way to achieve equity and reduce the ending balance? Is there a way to... There's got to be. I mean, this can't be the only approach.
They could issue a dividend to their members.
Is there not a way to charge a higher fee to out-of-state versus in-state? Lower the in-state, maintain the...
Well, we do for college tuition.
Madam Chair, excuse me.
Representative Avakian, and then we'll come to you, Ms. Reeves.
Earlier when I was asking questions about the ending balance and asking you to explain why... I think you gave some legitimate answers in part. My sense is they haven't been completely persuasive with this board that you need to have that big of an ending balance. And because you can justify the need to decrease your risk in case you have a big complaint that you need to investigate or something, but that could be true for every state board that does any kind of consumer protection. And it could also be true with respect to probably even doubling your ending balance. If you were to have, for instance, the Arthur Anderson case that your agency was solely in charge of investigating. And so there's this area at which point it becomes inappropriately high. And I'm just not sure that you've made a persuasive case that you haven't crossed that threshold, in case you want to comment on that.
Ms. Reeves?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Rockin. I certainly will take that back and see if we can provide more persuasive justification for the ending balance. And quite frankly, I've forgotten what I was going to say before.
We're going to do Senator Morris and then Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it within the purview of this panel to amend 5002 and reduce the fees as well as adding the equivalency?
Senator Morse, you followed my line of thinking. It was going to be my next question.
I'm going to ask professional staff to comment.
You need contract approval.
Likely so.
I would think we would need that approval on the amendment. This isn't a budget bill per se, it's a fee bill. We can certainly draft the amendment or go to the co-chairs to see if an amendment is acceptable to them.
Representative Smith.
I would share with you, Madam Chair, on this issue, and then I have a comment. I've done some homework on an issue related to this, and we have the ability to amend it. I think it's just the co-chairs need to...
Yeah.
I would, Madam Chair.
So, Representative Buckingham.
If we were going to go that way, I think I would be most comfortable giving the board a chance to come back to us with a recommendation on what the appropriate calculation would be.
I would concur with that, Madam Chair. And I'd be happy to change my vote on 2005 because I do understand the equity issue, and that's a proper argument. And I would be very pleased if the board came back to us and said, we agree we could make some adjustment in fees and we could make an adjustment in the fee structure at the same time. I'd be willing to consider that.
I'm persuaded only by the equity issue. I think I share my colleague's concern about a very high ending balance. While I appreciate and am sensitive to Representative Smith's comments about the conservative nature of CPAs as a group, and I appreciate the fiscal prudence of a high ending balance anticipating an unforeseen major investigation, I think you're hearing some concern expressed by this panel with respect to the high ending balance. As a practical matter, I had hoped to conclude the business of this board today. I think the sense of the panel is we'd like to hear from you one more time after you have the opportunity to reflect on our comments internally and come back to us. It will be a scheduling issue, and I'm going to ask Dallas if we could modify our schedule to find a half an hour to deal with this. I don't think that this will be a particularly lengthy undertaking after you've had a chance to reflect on it, what you've heard here, and report back.
Madam Chair, may I ask direction exactly what it is that you're wishing that we change?
Well, I would invite correction from the board if I from the panel if I've missed this, but what I have heard is some additional input on your high ending balance and a request for a fee increase. And I think what you have heard expressed by Representative Krupp is some question about could there be a rebate across the board to your licensees. I think some of us are persuaded by the equity argument, but whether or not the board has explored any other alternative that would make it equitable for the out-of-state folks to be licensed without undue burden on the Oregon licensees. I think we're just asking for a some report back that the board has listened to the panel's comments this morning and you have a response. Even if the response is we'd like to plow ahead with just exactly the proposal that we have here, we would at least like the benefit of having your board ruminate on the considerations of the panel and come back to us. Representative Smith.
You've encapsulated my comments very well. I would just add that perhaps to help the board, perhaps a member of the committee could work with them on this issue, and I'm not looking to volunteer, but someone who perhaps could work from our committee perspective on trying to make this work for you. That way you know, find where the balance is.
All right. I am... Senator Morsell.
Thank you. Getting back to the out-of-state fee that we might pay our own accountants who work for the state. Are they comparable to the charges that they charge their own accountants? I mean, in other words, do we pay an out-of-state a higher fee to function out-of-state?
Madam Chair, Senator Moore said no. The fees that we charge across the board are comparable to those charged in other states.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is that, that what you're saying then is that no other state charges our accountants to practice in that state than they charge their own accountants. Is that what I'm hearing?
Senator Johnson, Senator Morissette, the substantial equivalency fee in most states is about the same as we are charging, which is $100 per year. So... but it will vary from state to state, so that our licensees going to other states will also pay a fee, but it will be some, it will be comparable to the one that we charge out-of-state licensees.
I guess then, what I'm getting at is if we charged a higher out-of-state fee, we would be out of line with what other states are charging.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, yes, we would be out of line. And the suggestion that a higher fee to these people could reduce the fee to our own licensees isn't practical because we have only 45 of these people. In order to do that, it would be a matter of charging them $1,000 in order to cover our licenses.
Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, maybe possibly something for the committee to consider would be if we believe the policy should be 3 months reserves, or whatever it is, agree on that number, and then ask the agency to come back with a fee revision that brings that down to that and maintains that level of reserves, because it appears we're about, 50% now?
Representative Smith and Representative Avakian.
Thank you. In the same line of thought, but a little different with Senator Morris, I guess I would expect the board to come and tell us what they see as their need for an ending balance, not just a set month, because I don't know what a major investigation would cost, and I hate to have us do it across the board because the accountancy folks may be very different from the chiropractic folks who may be very different from attorneys, and so I'd like you to just come back and say this is why we have this ending balance.
Representative Avakian.
I would hope that the ruminations of the board would include a discussion with the governor's office on what the policy should be for these types of boards, because I've heard in our various committees everything from 3 months to 11 months as being an appropriate, if you would, business model for reserves. And I'm not convinced that there is anything but an ad hoc type policy. And then second, I would be inclined to something along the line that Senator Morris just described, or some type of a rebate that doesn't necessarily change your fee structure, but that simply reflects that at this period in time, there seems to be the ability to get something back.
We're really talking about two different things, though. We're talking about the fee increase with respect to equity, and that's how I see it described here, so that the burden to pay for these out-of-state folks doesn't fall on Oregon licensees. And then secondly, we're talking about the perception of a high ending balance. I think that we have two ways to proceed here. We can ask you to go and convene your board and have a conversation about this. I am hoping that you have a methodology to convene your board either electronically or by telephone so that you don't incur substantial costs in having this discussion. Invite you back at the end of sometime, whenever the scheduling works, and you can work with the professional staff to figure out when that is. I don't want to put an undue financial burden on the convocation of your board. And then come back to us with the board's thoughts on the request for the fee increase and any board observations about how high your ending balance is. It may well be that you will come back and say, after due deliberation on these two issues, the board says that this is a prudent ending balance and we need the fee in the name of equity. That's where you are right now, and that's fine. But I think what the board is interested, what this panel is interested in hearing now, is that there has at least occurred a conversation with your board on these two issues, and that we would then invite you back to deal with House Bill 5002 sometime in the future, whenever the scheduling worked, and ask you to work with Dallas to find that time. Does that fairly encapsulate where the panel is today?
It does. I'm sorry to be late.
Representative Avakian.
Could just add one other thing. I don't speak for the whole panel, but I would be encouraged if you were to come back and say, this is something we plan on doing by administrative rule. For instance, we don't need a statutory change, but we've crunched the numbers, and we think we can provide this for our members. Now, maybe after you meet and discuss outside of this meeting with other folks, a statutory change seems to be the way to go, but I wouldn't need that.
As we can tell, convocation.
When the board meets.
I got to go bring my friend Webster with me.
All right. Are we all okay on this panel? Then what I will do is to... close my agenda now.
Close the work session.
Thank you. Close the work session on House Bill 5002. And unless there's any additional comment from the panel, I would just like to acknowledge a friend of mine in the audience, Dr. Susan Toll, who's the head of the Ethics Center at Oregon Health Sciences University. Her daughter is my page today and will be with me on the floor. And Dr. Toll is a nationally recognized expert in end-of-life and palliative care issues. And through the work in her shop, much additional needed dialogue on end-of-life issues is occurring. And we're honored to have you here, Dr. Toll. Any additional comments from the panel? There being none, we stand adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning. When